Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome to our silver anniversary show. That's right, episode 50 of the Cloudcast. You know, once again, we're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And unfortunately, Aaron's out on the road tonight. He's doing the good dad thing before we get into trade show season. But, you know, over the last couple of months, the show has placed a much greater emphasis on security-related podcasts because, you know, we're hearing over and over it's an area that companies are concerned about. People are trying to understand the differences between, you know, just security in a physical world, security in a virtual world, security in a, you know, public cloud or dynamic environment. And one of the things we've never really done, we've talked a lot about services people deliver and products they deliver, but tonight we're going to kind of go behind the scenes of a private cloud service and really understand the realities, the complexities of, you know, today's, you know, complex cloud environment. So we're really excited tonight. Tonight we've got Phil Cox coming to us from RightScale. Phil's the Director of Security and Compliance. And Phil, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So give us a little bit of your background. You've got a pretty interesting role. So give us a little bit about yourself and then what your role is at RightScale.
Okay. Yeah. So about me... It starts way back. I'm a little older than I look. I spent 6 years on ballistic submarines.
Oh, wow.
As a nuke machinist mate. So I kind of chopped my teeth or got my teeth in a place where you had to design in security, right?
Yeah.
You know, incident response, processes and procedures, things that matter. When you live at most 150 feet from a nuclear reactor, you care about things like that.
Absolutely.
So I spent a lot of time doing that. Then I got out of the Navy and got my bachelor's of science of computer science at the College of Charleston. And right after that, I went to work at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories for being a system administrator for Reagan's Star Wars, you know, the brilliant Pebble.
Yeah. Wow.
So in that situation, I had both worked on both classified and unclassified systems. So got a little bit of an insight as to, you know, hey, this, you have to know what information you have and, hey, guess what? That piece of information has to stay on that side of the air gap or somebody goes to jail.
Right.
So,
or somebody,
you know,
dies or...
Pretty big stuff. And then, so spent some time at Lawrence Livermore, then kind of got the itch, went out and did the consulting thing and actually started my own consulting company and learned that business is harder than just being, you know, you can be a great technical guy, but being a good business guy, those aren't always the same.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do.
It is hard to make the first dollar. Beyond that, maybe not so much, but yeah, absolutely. So
yeah. So spent some time doing that, and then I kind of got tired of you know, trying to make that dollar, and an opportunity came up to go back to Lawrence Livermore and be a part of their incident response team, which is SEAC.
Okay.
So I was a member of the Department of Energy's incident response team, and kind of that's where I got immersed in security. Up to that time, it was mostly about system administration, kind of doing some Windows stuff and things like that. But then I got into it. I started doing penetration testing when people weren't doing it, and I was trained how to do it. I walked into guys that just knew this stuff,
okay,
and they showed me processes, and it was so cool. And I got to actually do testing of three-letter agencies and very kind of interesting, you know, responded, found out how to respond to incidents. You know, that was the time when, you know, national labs were getting broken into, systems were, it was that kind of Wild West time.
Right.
Started doing some teaching, actually with Tina Darmere, my boss at the time, at Lawrence Livermore. And it was, we actually did this thing called Computer Attacks, Trends, and Countermeasures, which was, it was the precursor to like the hacking exposed stuff. It was
okay.
The first one that I ever saw where we actually did live things before Eric and, you know, Joel and those guys. So it was just kind of really got immersed into that, got into Windows, you know, started syncing up with like Dominic Brzezinski and those type of guys, Greg Hoagland before he went to HB Gary, you know, syncing with that from the technical DOE side and just really getting into the guts of, you know, those type of things. And, you know, started speaking a lot.
Very cool.
Spent some time there and then kind of got tired of doing that and then went to work for System Experts where I System Experts is a consulting company, great company. Got to plug them because I love them. I was there for 12 years. They're just
excellent.
They're a phenomenal company. I just loved it. And I'll little, why did I leave? I'll answer that in a second. But that's where I got my chops in. Did a lot of pen testing and application testing for financial services, manufacturing companies, and we're talking big customers.
Yeah.
I mean, big financial services company. So got kind of that understanding of big organizations, how that works. And that's when I got involved in PCI. I was a QSA for 5 years, did a ton of ISO 27001, 27002, HIPAA, baseline audits, those type of things. So I really kind of got my compliance chops at System Experts, and having all that background that I brought into it, just kind of as it all formulated together. And then at System Experts too, I was able to actually wrote a book on Windows 2000 security, and I think I wrote the first white paper on hardening Windows 2000, which was on Microsoft's site for, I don't know, 6-9 months before they actually had one up. So kind of in that thing, I've always been on kind of the leading edge of dealing with technology. Hence, the opportunity, my best friend worked for RightScale, and I found out that they were looking for somebody to basically direct the security program. They wanted to kind of take it to the next level.
Right.
And I said, hey, I've been telling people how to do this for the past 20 years. Why don't I go do it? So started with RightScale, and so that's where I'm at right now. Is I'm at RightScale. I'm the director of security compliance, and so RightScale is an infrastructure as a service cloud management platform.
Okay.
And we'll talk more about it just because the specifics of what we do. But I'm in charge of not only directing the product itself. Like, let's say you want to use it, you've got a security requirement, making sure that the platform we have is secure. That falls under my bailiwick, but I'm also like the CISO for RightScale, the company.
Okay. Okay.
So,
and CISO, for those folks that don't live in the space, is Chief Security Officer, or CSO, or
yeah.
Chief Information Security Officer.
Yeah. So within RightScale, right, it's called the security guy.
So that's a very it's a very heavy duty background. I mean, it's if I had to sum it up, beyond the details, I mean, you've lived in environments, you've worked in environments where the scale of the threat is enormous, right? Not only the scale in terms of the resources that the attackers had, but the thing that you were trying to protect, the value of that thing is enormous. And whether it was, like you said, the nuclear assets of the United States, or whether it was things we're doing in outer space, or now what you guys are doing, which is really the livelihood of a lot of businesses. A lot of businesses, their reputation online, people's credit cards. I mean, it's cool, I guess, and this is the thing I always find about certain industries. The people that have taken on really big challenges tend to be the people they look to when another really, really big challenge comes along. So it feels like right guy for the right place for the right kind of challenge.
I hope so. I'd be lying if I didn't say looking at RightScale and seeing who was there and kind of the opportunity was also, I'm not a fool. I looked at it and said, I like what I see.
Yep.
You got just some smart guys, and dealing, and what I would argue is kind of leaders in what we do.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a real good fit coming here.
Very cool. So we've talked about RightScale a little bit on the show. We've definitely spoken quite a bit about this idea that more and more companies are trying to figure out whether it's adoption of private cloud resources, Amazon, Rackspace, Microsoft, Google, whoever that might be, or they're trying to figure out sort of these hybrid strategies. They've got data centers and infrastructure that they run, but they've got other needs that are inside or outside the firewall. They might want to leverage multiple clouds because they're rolling out mobile application, whatever it might be. We've talked about there really is this new need to have kind of an overlay management, governance, kind of operations dashboard, if you will, but really a framework that says, I look at the world as resources. I look at the world as how do I deploy them? How do I manage them? But it's not just, you know, your environment per se. It's leveraging the marketplace and leveraging the breadth of the marketplace and all the different services and price points and geographic things that they offer. So let's dive a little bit into RightScale, and then let's kind of get back into the guts underneath the cloud. So let's talk about RightScale for a little bit. You guys are one of the leading companies. You know, the Google announcement came out, the Google Cloud announcement came out recently, Microsoft sort of updated Azure. You guys were front and center. Talk about what you do in those environments for folks that maybe aren't totally familiar with it.
Yeah, so RightScale is we're a SaaS-based service, you know, like a Salesforce or something like that. But our job is to manage those cloud resources, be them private, you know, Eucalyptus, OpenStack, or CloudStack-based, mm-hmm. or public clouds. I think there's 9 public clouds that we support.
Okay.
You named what we affectionately call mega clouds: Azure, you know, Google Compute Engine, Amazon Web Services. There's Rackspace, DataPipe, you know, LogicWorks, SoftLayer, and I'm going to get in if I don't remember.
Yeah, all. GoGrid, and the big 9 or 10, yeah.
Yeah, so we manage, we help people, you know, I say start and stop instances, deploy applications, right, in a manner that really is kind of abstracted. And that's what we bring to the table.
Okay.
If the world ends up being a single cloud, right, let's say that the whole industry ended up being one thing, if it was VMware or it was CloudStack or it was Amazon only, you could argue that there may not be a need for a RightScale. Mm-hmm. But what we do is that we don't think that that's going to happen. We've bet the farm on multi-cloud and hybrid cloud, which are arguably one and the same, that from that standpoint, when you deploy an instance, you want it deployed. You may say, hey, I can throw this over in Google because it's got a better I/O performance, or Amazon just released their new IOPS on this service. I just want that deployed there. Well, utilizing RightScale, you select the cloud you want it on, and it's there. It's done. So you don't have to go and say, oh, I want to deploy. Is it an AMI that I deploy here, or is it? Do I have my? It just does it for you. So in a sense of, you know, those clouds and why they, for lack of better words, you know, why we're front and center with them, mostly is because I think the RightScale platform is probably one of the top 10 cloud apps, software as a service apps in terms of complexity on the planet.
Yep.
And the fact is we run it. Right? I mean, we run a SaaS application, so we know what it's like to do cloud. You know, we actually worked with Azure and Google for a significant period of time before the announcement, helping them figure out, hey, how do you do this? What is it like to run a cloud? What do you need? How do you, you know, how do you manage the API? What APIs are there? So giving them kind of the expertise that we have in terms of not only managing cloud, but actually running in the cloud. And that's kind of one of the other things that is unique from my standpoint, and I think my position is RightScale as a company, we're all in cloud.
Right. It's all eating your own dog food. I mean, I think you make a very good point there in terms of, you know, if the world became completely homogenous, everybody ran out of, you know, one company, pick one, whichever, then yeah, maybe that's not a big deal. But even if, you know, everybody became OpenStack, for example, just as, you know, just to pick one, you know, in talking to, you know, different people who've been on our show before that focus on legal things, you know, we've had all kinds of discussions that say, look, the laws in Europe versus the laws in the United States versus the laws in different parts of the world would be different. So you're still going to need to have some way of sort of saying, look, I'd like to operate them consistently, but I do need to be aware that, you know, even if it was an OpenStack cloud provider in Europe and the technology is the same, they may have different rules they have to have for compliance, for, you know, data retention. And so, yeah, no, so I would agree. I think the space that you guys are in and the sort of the challenge that you're going after, which is provide ubiquity of operation across a lot of disparate systems and marketplaces, is a really important thing. And I don't know that enough businesses really understand yet that they're going to need a system of this kind in order to be able to really operate efficiently and take advantage of, you know, changes in the market, speed in the market, and different types of services that might help them as they grow their businesses.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I think that the one of the podcasts I was listening to of yours a while back just talked about that the adoption of cloud now is just in its infancy.
Yep.
You know, it's so small, and I do. I think people don't understand that technology. Just one quick kind of back thing. When I said we're all in the cloud, I mean we're all in. From a corporate standpoint, we don't own systems. Everything we have is a cloud-based service.
Okay.
I mean, so we not only the service, but everything that we have that runs our company is in the cloud. So that's where kind of my perspective is, not only from the platform standpoint, but I have to be able to do compliance from a CISO, from a chief security officer standpoint, of cloud-based services.
Right.
So let's
start from there. Let's sort of break that down a little bit. Now, you know, so if you guys were just a standard business and you made widgets, you weren't really kind of in the electronic business, but you said, look, we're going to run all of our IT assets in the cloud. You know, that's going to involve, you know, human resource records, so personal information. You're going to have corporate data that, you know, it's going to have different life cycles as to, you know, how long you have to keep it, whether it's email or whether it's, you know, intellectual property. And then for you guys, because you run a business that is not only, you know, taking credit cards on a monthly basis or however you handle fees, but now you guys, because you're managing other people's clouds, I assume you have to keep track of their passwords for all the different cloud providers. There's other, you know, levels of security information that you have to provide almost on a proxy basis for your customers. Is that the right maybe place to start? What do you have to secure? What information are we talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the answer to your question is yes, we have to do both of those. So mentally I segment it in corporate IT and then the platform.
Okay.
Is our PCI compliance for our, you know, for the credit cards we have? How do we handle our payroll information, our HR information? You know, what do we do with files? How do we protect them? Kind of what, like what you said, if we sold widgets, what we would have to do in that standpoint. And then there's the platform. So let's kind of walk down, because I think from a practical standpoint, that first part is what a lot of people are dealing with, because they're consuming, most people are consuming cloud resources. And they're like, how can I do this in a proper manner? And I guess I'd throw it out there to say, you know, it's not that different, right? If you think about it, just kind of get rid of all the preconceived notions and think about hosted service providers, think about co-location facilities, think about those things. We've relied on trusting others, trusting third parties, our ISPs, those type of things. We have a basic framework for it. And when it comes down to cloud services in general, and there are little caveats as to whether it's a platform as a service, infrastructure, software as a service, but it really comes down to looking at it and saying, can this service meet these requirements? Does it protect my data accordingly? What type of, and this is probably the biggest problem with cloud computing, and it's, I think Chris Hoff would probably jump up and down saying, yippee, 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 if, I don't think he'd probably say that, but... Can't imagine him saying that, but it's the transparency part. That's the thing, that because of the maturity, we're kind of right now we have to trust people. And one of the things that I've done from a platform standpoint is I've tried to document and give things. So when customers come in and say, hey, what are you doing with my AWS cloud credential? How do I know that you're protecting that? I got no problem. It's like, hey, I'll open up the robe. This is how we're doing it. These are the exact steps. This is the encryption we use. This is how we do it. This is how I validate it. And I show them, right? It's kind of showing them. So what I look for from the corporate standpoint is when we're engaging a SaaS provider or infrastructure or something, I'm looking for that type of transparency from them. Okay. Because it's automated. Until there's something like a cloud audit that everybody embraces and that we can do it in a, you know, kind of an automated fashion, it gets back to trusting somebody. And I'm sure you've dealt with it. You can tell when somebody's lying to you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're talking to them. I'm technically savvy enough that you you talk to somebody, and you can tell. You know, it's like, you're lying because your lips are moving.
Yeah.
Like, I don't trust you. You're going to have to prove this. And then other people, they talk about, they explain things, and you look at them, and you know you can trust them because it's just, there's something about it.
Right.
I don't remember a compliance box that says, yeah, I trust this guy because there's something about it, right? So from that standpoint, it's going through and doing due diligence on the providers that we have. So how would I, counsel the widget, the CISO of the widget company that wants to use cloud services is, your company has to have policies, right? You have to have thought about you have to know what data you're putting where, and then find out how that cloud provider protects it. They have, and it's just that process. It's not really anything new. I think, somebody throws the word cloud and it skews the whole conversation where the operative word in cloud security is not cloud, right? It's type of things.
So it sounds like, it sort of sounds like what you're saying. And a lot of times when we have folks on here that are going to talk about complicated things, they sort of go, look, it's you really got to get back to basics so that you don't kind of forget that what you're doing is whatever that task is. I mean, if I'm an IT professional or I'm the security officer for anybody, Fortune 500 company, and you've moved from physical servers, there was a way to secure those. You knew where demarcation points were for in and out traffic. You could identify a box. You could track it a certain way. Like you said, you could figure out how the data was managed, if it needed to be encrypted. Then they went through this phase of, okay, we're going to start virtualizing things. And that sort of threw people for a loop for a little while because you didn't really know where the server was per se. It could be a virtual machine. It could move. It could be sharing a network connection. There weren't those air gaps. And now as we move into, say, public clouds, those technologies are still the foundations of it, right? I mean, it's not as if, the cloud guys have some magic way to segment up a box. They don't have any additional, super unicorn fluffy encryption algorithms. I mean, it's really more a matter of, like you said, are they doing the right things? And then, probably like you said, like, how do I know? How do I get that transparency that I could when I do it myself and I can look at the checklist? I mean, is that valid, or am I making it too simple?
No, that's exactly valid. And the one thing I would say is, having been in those big companies, having been a consultant to them, and you talk about the data flows and the systems and knowing where everything's at, they had the potential, but they never did it. Right? I mean, people, I've got this before. They didn't do it. They didn't know what things were there. But yeah, it is. It's about bringing things. And it really is nothing new. Some of the technologies, the way it's done, the fact that we don't have to put a network tap before in your data center, maybe look at something, where now it's not quite that easy. So there are some changes, but in what we're really talking about, there isn't. For example, let's take PCI. I just wrote a blog post on doing PCI in the public cloud. Mm-hmm. Right? I was a QSA for 5 years. I'm at RightScale. I was on the PCI virtualization, the scoping SIG. I'm on the cloud SIG. And I still hear people, can't do PCI in the cloud. And I pull my hair out. So I wrote this blog post. And the fact of it is that we are PCI compliant. We're not a level one merchant, where we've got 10,000, 10 million credit cards that we do. So we have a self-assessment questionnaire that we walk through. And I made the decision, right, which I think everybody should try, is we don't store cardholder data, right? Again, we use a service provider, so I rely on them to do that. Right. It's how we architect it. But people should be doing that, whether it's in the cloud or whether they've got a system they're using themselves. Mm-hmm. So we walk through, part of the thing was, I wrote the policies. I walked in. RightScale is an agile shop, right? It's everything we do is based on agile. So there wasn't a lot of documented policies and procedures and wrote. So when I came in, it was like, how are we doing things and document those policies? And if there was a need for a change, socialize it and get that change to happen. But for the most part, document the policies. Then, we use RightScale to manage RightScale. So I use these RightScale server template stuff to deploy systems securely. You know, I leveraged a couple of our third-party partners, Cloud Passage. I think Rand was on your... So we use Cloud Passage to provide some of the, you know, some of the security services and kind of the separation between security and operations, kind of that validation. So we use that. We use Trend Micro's OSSEC, looked at a couple other things, and we've, you know, we have a fully compliant PCI, operating application in public cloud, runs in it. And so it was done, and it can be done. And those are the type of things that just because it's cloud, people think, oh, we can't do that. And it really isn't. It's very doable.
Yeah. And it's something that if you guys, a new customer comes along and, you know, probably let's say a large customer comes along. I mean, you have, you know, it used to be the days when you would go to the colo and you would go look at their locks and you would look at, you know, the way they did stuff. I mean, you guys have a way to provide that sense of transparency or visibility to your new customers so that they, you know, they trust you. They look at their background, but they can sort of trust but verify.
Yeah, and that's part of the – when I came in, everybody deals with this, right? Got all these – every customer come in, they had their RFQ, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a questionnaire. It's like, ah, Lord, another one. So I came up with – I developed the Right Scale Security Program and Platform document that is similar to like what Amazon and Azure and the other, you know, clouds have that talk about their security. It actually goes into more depth. Actually talks about how we do a lot of this stuff. So it's not just sitting out there, you know, free for the taking, but if it's a qualified lead, you know, somebody that really is interested in Right Scale, that, you know, our sales guys give that to them. And if they have any questions, they'll fire me up on the horn. We'll get, and if somebody really wanted to, if they wanted to come in and look at the logs, right, they wanted to look at all, it'd be like, I'll meet you in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
So, and that's the, until we get to the point where we can do things in a automated, transparent fashion, that's the stance that we've taken, because we feel like, listen, you can do this. It is secure. You can do this, and we're willing to open the robe and let you see.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of that open source, closed source thing. While we do, you know, we have intellectual property and things, it's, you know, we're not hiding anything.
Right.
You know, real quickly too, one of the things that's always, this is kind of my pet peeve when it's about cloud and security and people complaining about, we can't cover cloud. I do not know of a single breach, right, that was ever done because of cloud architecture, right? It's always because somebody had a lousy password, somebody didn't salt their database, it's SQL injection, it's stuff that has nothing to do with cloud itself. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, and so talk about that for a second as much as you can. So, I always joke around a little bit that, if you're an IT professional, you know, let's say you're a vendor and you're selling, you know, sort of traditional equipment against some of the cloud providers, you know, one of your better days is when somebody like Amazon goes down because it's a source of FUD, right? It's not a great thing, but it's something that comes up. What happens for you guys, especially for somebody that's in the security domain, when something like, you know, the LinkedIn thing comes out and you find out, oh, they didn't salt their passwords, which, you know, is a pretty standard 101 level type of, I mean, like, how much hassle is that for you? How much do you have to sort of backtrack and go retrain things? Or are people getting smarter and they realize what you just said, which is like, it's not so much cloud, it's just bad operations, or it's a mistake, or, I mean, like, how does that affect your guys' world because people still don't really understand the cloud very well yet?
Yeah, so from the standpoint of customers and those type of things, it's all lumped in, right? It's, oh, LinkedIn's compromise, it's the cloud, it's that cloud thing. And so we end up basically having that discussion again. It's, hey, people do this, you know, this is what you do. Why aren't you vulnerable to that?
Yep.
Not vulnerable. You know, so kind of explaining it. So it's not to the point where the vast kind of majority and even consumers of these services really understand that concept. that it's about secure systems and secure applications. It's not about whether it's a colo or a public cloud or a private cloud, right? Okay. So that's, you know, kind of one thing. But from a standpoint, again, looking at it from the corporate standpoint, sales, those type of things, that's, you know, that's my one perspective. The other one is when I see a LinkedIn, right, it's like one to two reactions. Oh, I don't believe this, right? I hope we're not vulnerable to that, right?
Yep.
I'm responsible for this. You know, I got to go check. Because I don't know everything about our platform. It's complex. I know as much as I can, but I don't know everything. The one thing, and gets back to why I'm now very happy I went to RightScale as well. When I was at System Experts, I always seemed to be able to say, hey, have you thought about X? And somebody look at me and kind of, you know, cockeyed and say, you don't really haven't. I am continually stymied within RightScale when something like that comes up, like for LinkedIn or whatever, and I'll contact, you know, our security engineers or our scrum leads, say, hey, have you thought about this? And inevitably, the answer is, oh, yeah, we thought about that before. I almost wonder, why am I here? You know, I feel like I have something real good, you know, some good nugget. Bring it in, say, hey, have you guys thought about, you know, hey, how salted? Oh, well, we use a random, you know, 160 character binary value as a, and I'm like, oh, okay, glad we got that. So from that standpoint, it seems like people that are deploying to the cloud, right, either are doing it too fast or they're not thinking about it. And so from that standpoint, I spend a lot of time within RightScale on education. That's kind of, I feel like that, especially since we're agile, right, we do a lot of education and just kind of I'll tell you the great one. Was it Mac? Was it at Mac? The guy that got his...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, Matt, at Matt, yeah. The guy who got basically his whole life erased just recently was in Wired Magazine.
I was going to say, I feel sorry for at Matt. I really do. But I'll tell you what. He is the poster child for password complexity, good authentication, doing the right thing within RightScale.
Yeah.
It's those type of training opportunities that show people this is why it's important. So to your question of what happens when something like a LinkedIn or, you know, those type of things happen, people equate it to the cloud. I'm hoping, right, that you know, myself, guys like Dave Mortman, you know, Rand, everybody that's in cloud, that as we talk more and more about this and try to educate people to say, it's not the cloud, right? Cloud security is about security, not the cloud. Getting that message across, I think, is going to happen, you know, at some point in time.
Yeah, it's sort of baking it into the DNA of people, and it just has to become something that you know how to do and deal with. But yeah, it's an evolving process. So let's do this for a little bit. We've kind of dove into the security piece for a little bit behind the scenes. Let's talk about how it impacts the business to a certain extent. So, you know, as you said, you know, RightScale is in essence in the business of, you know, multiple clouds and people looking to leverage multiple services, whether it's for redundancy or geography or whatever the reason it is. It could be a programming language for a platform as a service. What do you guys see happening in this sort of next generation IT? Who's driving it from your perspective and starting to leverage multiple clouds? Is it, you know, what if you had to throw a percentage against it, how much of it is, you know, being developer led or line of business led versus, you know, traditional IT trying to just, you know, use resources in a new way?
99%
driven by the application folks.
Almost inevitably. I mean, what we find is that, again, because it's so new, that the traditional IT, you know, the IT environments, they're slow to move. Mm-hmm. But you got businesses who want to get things done. I mean, that's why Amazon is the way it is. You know, for the past, what, 7 years? Or, you know, seven years, business guy says, I need an instance. Boom, got a credit card. I'm up. I'm running.
Yep.
You know, to get those things done. So we see most of the effort on the external lines of business And then what happens is that IT is kind of waking up and saying, listen, we need to control this, right? We need to have some cost control. We need to have, you know, we've got compliance issues that we need to be able to control and manage these things. So they're kind of coming on board and getting on board with that. So from that standpoint, it seems it's the line of businesses that are driving kind of the next gen IT. It's, you know, interestingly enough, we just had done a market survey that we're kind of asking people who's, you know, private cloud or only public or hybrid. And 68% of the people that we talk to are looking at this hybrid type multi-cloud environment. Yep. Because they look at, because exactly what you said, you've got different requirements, regions, whatever it happens to be. And the interesting part of that is that we see IT, or what we call next gen IT, kind of evolving. And it is being driven by those lines of business. But we also see that central IT is kind of embracing that. You know what I mean? They realize that if they don't embrace it, they're going to be left. Yep. That they have to do it. And that ends up kind of looking like three characteristics in these environments that we see of people that are really doing. And, you know, the first driver is kind of, it's about agility, right? And it was interesting because I think you wrote a blog, didn't you, about evolving definitions of hybrid cloud?
Yep. Yeah, I wrote one a couple weeks ago.
So the agility part is, you know, basically able to take advantage of a business opportunity. We need to get something going. A lot of people call it self-service IT. We actually have a different phrase for it. We call it wait IT, right? Since we want to basically eliminate ways. And one of our customers, Eli Lilly, has that. They have this thing called an IT vending machine. Hmm. You want those? You click the dashboard. You know, obviously, we'd all like to think that the cloud is instantaneous. It's not, right? You click the dashboard, go fill up your coffee cup, and when you come back, you've got your three-tier deployment, right? It's there. It's running. It's available. They've done that, you know, utilizing RightScale, and that's one of the things we see is really driving that agility, which I think is kind of consistent with your automated deployments for and stuff to any cloud.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the more and more I talk to people, and you know, I'll be, you know, very transparent. I tend to sometimes look at things too much from a vendor side of things as opposed to sometimes the business side of things, just because of, you know, who pays my bills. But, you know, I tend to look at the public cloud to a certain extent, and, you know, I think you validated it when you said, look, you know, most of your customers are driven by lines of business and application developers. Is we're at a stage today where it's not really, you know, the public cloud is so much taking away from IT. If you know you're concerned about it, the public cloud is basically saying, look, IT, you know, you've only got so much capacity. There's only so many things you can do. There's only so many hours in the day. But the reality is your business is always going to go faster than you. This has been the case forever. And the only difference now is they now have a second option. They have an option to say, if I'm willing to pay some fee and I'm willing to have developers maybe that work on behalf of me as opposed to what you do to run IT, like I have a second option. And they're really, you know, the public clouds today are taking advantage of this excess demand. It's not so much supply side, it's all this excess demand. And I think, you know, what you guys do and that Eli Lilly example is a perfect example. You know, their IT organization could have set up the RightScale dashboard to do that. And they could say, look, you guys can turn up VM instances all you want, as long as you're paying for them. And I as the old IT group or the group that's responsible for compliance has visibility, do whatever you want with it. It's not my budget. It's not my time. It's just my visibility. And I think that value proposition for IT, you know, saying, look, I can't do it, but I need visibility is really, really powerful thing. I think it's something that they could go to their lines of business and say, I can actually help you with innovation, and actually I can probably make it a little simpler for you to get on, and then go crazy. Do whatever you want with the business. Create up a new marketing scheme. Create up, you know, two or three new mobile applications for when you do those mobile road shows. And Like, to me, that's really, really powerful. And it's not about so much, you know, shadow IT fighting with IT. It's about just business demand and supply.
Yeah, and it's moving that way.
Yeah.
And like those IT, the IT people, they get it, right? It's just they're busy doing something else.
Yeah.
This happened, and they get it. So that agility, you know, that agility is key, and it is, I would argue that it's probably the biggest driver for the use of public cloud and, you know, and what, kind of what's driving cloud usage. You know, the other thing that we see in that next gen IT is the whole thing of like, and you mentioned it a little bit, is what we call workload liberation, right? Mm-hmm. That you've got something and I want it. Okay, I've got it set up. It's running in Amazon, but let's say, you know, I can get a great deal on, you know, I get a great deal on Google Compute for the next 48 hours. I'm just obviously making this.
Sure.
It's like, I want to go. I want to be able to do that. Well, you have to have kind of planned that before. And that's where we see, obviously, we see that need in the marketplace being a big one, and that's one of the ones we're trying to fill, obviously, you know, with our platform. And there are other people that do, management as well. I mean, I think, you know, you guys have heard on your show a number of times, like in Stratus, you know.
Yeah.
There's a number of companies, but we see that being able to support that transparently, right, as being huge in terms of that next-gen IT. And the reality is that it can have some significant financial impacts if you're talking about decent, if you're talking one or two instances, but when you start talking about big scale and what will probably ultimately end up being in large companies when enterprises start consuming this stuff, you're talking real money.
Yeah, well, and you know, even if it's not, you know, moving for, say, the lowest price, I mean, you know, just taking a develop environment, right? You've got most companies, at least larger size companies, are going to have, you know, some amount of localized development, whether you're, you know, say in the, you know, North America or whatever, and then you're going to have some that's overseas somewhere. It's in Eastern Europe, it's in India, it's in China. You know, the last thing you want to do is annoy developers and give them this tremendous lag. So put, you know, let them set up an environment that's localized to them. Now, what they're going to do with that application after they develop it, well, you know, they might move it back to a U.S. data center. They might move it to a European data center. And if there's, you know, like you guys can provide, whether it's totally there today or it's, you know, coming, you know, for them to just say, I'll just put it wherever it ends up being the most economical or the lowest delay or, you know, the best prices for bandwidth, like that's going to be really, really powerful. I mean, it just, like you said, that movability of workloads. And I would assume, you know, one of the values that you talk to people about is you don't have to think about, well, how does Google run their infrastructure and am I going to have to tweak a lot of stuff? And how does Amazon, like, you guys know about that, you understand it, and you'll sort of deal with the translations between them, right?
Right, and that's the, you're like a lead-in guy, right? That's the characteristic of what we see next-gen IT is the whole thing about management of scale. Mm-hmm. It's about, it is that management layer, and that, you know, when you think about, okay, there's the agility, right? There's the workload liberation, but it's the management thing that's going to glue all of that together, that's going to make that happen, and that is a non- Like running cloud data centers, you know, I think people, before the first Amazon outage, everybody thought, oh, running a cloud data center, that must be easy. You know, then they had a problem and people are like, whoa, wait a minute. You mean that's hard to do? Well,
yeah. This
integrating with Azure, with Google Compute, with these type of things, it's hard. It's a complex, very, very complex thing. And while it may seem easy when you use, you know, a right scale interface, it's not. And that third part of that next gen IT, and you alluded to it, is that internal IT departments providing that almost push button availability to their businesses, right?
Yep.
That is going to be, next gen IT is going to be about providing agility, providing workload liberation, and providing just a great management interface that people can just use to get their business needs done.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. So let me do this because we're sort of getting to that point where folks aren't going to be able to fit this show into one of their commutes. Let me ask you one last question and we'll sort of wrap it up. You know, RightScale recently acquired a company called Shop for Cloud, which for folks that don't know, they basically provide a financial visibility into what's how much usage people have. It's I don't want to misjudge it, but it's sort of similar to a Cloudability, is another company that we've had on recently. So I want to ask you, and again, it's a brand new acquisition for you guys, so you may not have all of this, but you guys make an investment into a company like Shop for Cloud. Are you seeing that because of this shift in the lines of business want to have greater visibility in what they're doing, or is it because they're trying to leverage more functionality out of one service? They don't want to, they're sort of asking you, like, I don't want to have to go here for the dollars, and then I have to go over here for capacity, and I have to go, did you guys see it more as your customers want to see consolidated viewpoints, or did you think you saw it more because, the business, more and more business users who have to justify cost were driving you in that direction, or was it sort of a combination of both of them?
It really is a combination, but it is, people want one stop.
Yeah.
People like choice. People like one thing. I have an iPhone, I have an iPad, and I have a Mac, right?
And they all work together.
People like that. So by buying, Shop for Cloud, right, what we were able to do is we have enterprise users, right? I mean, enterprise is a big, that's central IT. Those people, they need cost control. They need things. And they don't need to go to 20 different places. They don't want to go there. If you can provide that as a service through our platform, it just makes us more attractive.
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's one of the things I think is really, really cool that's happening. And you mentioned like Cloud Passage. The fact that, folks like RightScale and others do this, but because of all the leveraging of API, a lot of these services can now be brought together, and it doesn't have to be physically moving stuff. It's, we're going to leverage the APIs. We know how to talk between them, and we can make cool services come together like that. So that's very, very cool to me, and very, very, again, about that next generation of IT.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, it's we're seeing it's not there yet, not that, even close in a lot of places. Hopefully, a couple of years, I'm guessing, before it really, takes on. But yeah, I mean, you've got everybody, you've got DevOps, you can see it, right? You can see the train coming down the track, and just hope a lot of us, it's a wide open space, and hopefully we work together and kind of keep the train on the tracks.
Yeah, right? No, it's an exciting time because of all the change. And like you said, it's a very, very hard set of problems to do things at large scale, and just to be able to overcome the, do I trust somebody else to provide some service that I used to provide for myself at a different scale or a different cost or whatever that is. So, well, listen, Phil, this has been a really, really interesting conversation. Thank you for being on tonight. We're out of time for the week. So real quick, for folks that want to, follow some of the things you're writing on your blog or run into you at one of the trade shows, what's the best way to connect what you're doing in the world of security and compliance or what you're doing with RightScale?
Yeah, so you can reach me at on Twitter at, it's at SEC, SEC underscore prof, PROF. I'm the guy with the green lantern.
Okay.
Or email, you can send, Phil at RightScale.com or the security guy at RightScale.com goes to me. And then the blog.rightscale.com.
Okay, so. Very, very cool. And you guys are obviously typically always present at the big, cloud computing shows, and folks probably can run into you out there as well. So if you run into Phil, buy him a beer and pick his brain about security. Obviously, he's got a ton of experience that probably can help you in some way. Folks, we're going to wrap it up for the show. If you like the show, tell a friend, leave us a review on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, or come out to the web and leave us some comments in the show notes. You can always find links to the show on Facebook. You can check out the whiteboards and other videos on the YouTube channel. And again, you can find the show on YouTube and Stitcher and tune in. So for Phil, thanks again for being on tonight. And for everybody that listens, have a great weekend.
Thanks, man.